at all. Isn't that something for scholars and seminarians? What is the role of theology in our everyday lives? Whether it is clear to us or not, each of us has a functional theology for navigating the big religious questions. We hold views about the meaning of life, our purpose, our place in the universe, what happens to us after we die. We have a framework for answering these big questions. Some of this framework may come from your childhood religions, your current religion, reading, thinking, cultural influences. So let me give you a couple of examples of these frames. For people who have an orthodox view, the frame is an all-knowing God who has a plan for each of us, and it's our purpose to understand and live in harmony with that plan. Others may have a frame that says everything has evolved from a great creative force that drives the universe, and our purpose is to engage with that creative force. Another possibility is others who hold the theology that centers on humans. Humans as actors in the world, and the belief that it is human actions alone that can save us. Whether conscious or not, these frames affect our choices, the choices we make on how we choose to live our lives. And among those of us here in this room, you will find many theological frames. Now, theology is the process of examining these frames, studying the underlying assumptions, and thinking about how they influence our lives and the choices that we make. Our theology must make sense to us. It must inspire us to make a difference. Being intentional about our theology allows us to make choices that support our beliefs and our values. Theology can ground our actions. But this morning in particular, I want to examine liberal theology, the origins of Unitarian Universalism. Now, the term liberal doesn't necessarily refer to being politically liberal, though most of us are. Liberal is a sense of being responsive to the world, liberal in the sense of being open to new ideas. We refer to our liberal religion as a living tradition, one that changes as new truths and meanings emerge. The liberal theologies of Unitarians and Universalists are both the product of what is called modern thinking. The term modern refers to a period or an era that began roughly at the time of Galileo, who studied the planets in a new way. And though modernity is very much with us, it has started its decline sometime in the late 20th century. So modern thought, these ideas that came out of the modern era, are so prevalent in Western culture that they're a little bit like water that we're swimming in. We are the fish who don't even have an awareness that the water itself exists. And yet modern thinking has had a profound effect on the world. In this first part of the sermon, I want to examine some of the major ideas of our modern thinking, because now, in the 20th century, for better or for worse, these ideas are present and are shifting. We must make them visible to understand how these ideas have served us and how they need to change. So the biggest idea of this modern era is the use of reason as a guiding force. For Unitarians and Universalists, that meant using reason to discern religious truth. This is what separated the Unitarians from the Christians in the early 19th century. Drawing from these ideas of modernity, Unitarians stated that we should decide for ourselves what is true based on our own reasoning rather than on external authority. Many of you left the church of your youth because you wanted to make your own choices and not be told what to believe. The idea of the importance of reason permeates much of our modern thinking. Another big idea of the modern era is the autonomy of the self. If you studied philosophy, you may remember Descartes' famous statement, "I think, therefore I am." This was a modern philosophy, a radical shift from the previous ways of thinking. Another way of saying autonomy of the self is the idea of subjectivity. In modernist thinking, the self is at the center, and everything is in relation to the self. Our Constitution and Declaration of Independence were based on the ideas of the rights of the individual. And at the time, it was considered a radical way of seeing the world. So I can imagine, so far, most of the things that I've said are probably giving you a, so what? What's the point? The point is that it is important to recognize that these were radical ideas at the time. It took hundreds of years for these ideas to become prevalent in Western culture. And these are the lens through which we view the world. And as we shall see, this lens has distorted our world in particular ways. Another hallmark of liberal religion is that the idea that we will have progress forever and ever until we all live in peace and harmony. A beloved Unitarian Universalist idea. It's the theology of the arc of the universe bending towards justice. It is the belief that human exploration and science will answer all of our questions and cure all of our ills. It's an inspiring and hopeful idea. Related to this idea is the idea of universality. That there are certain ideas and truths that are universally true no matter who you are and no matter where you live. So at this point you may say, sounds pretty good to me. Sounds pretty much like our world and our views right now. It's served us for many centuries. Since the latter part of the 20th century, we have seen many challenges and collapse of some of these ideas as the world has grown smaller and more voices are brought into the dialogue. The modernist ideas that I have outlined reflect a white male, Eurocentric way of thinking. Many people and ideas are left out of this worldview. So here are some of the challenges up to this modernist way of viewing the world. The focus on the individual has led to fragmentation and loss of community. The focus on individual rights has diminished responsibility to our community. The focus on reason has resulted in our disengagement from the body, from intuition, and forms of knowing that are not intellectual. It elevated science and human knowledge above nature and natural systems. The mind-body duality finds its way into our thinking in many ways. The idea of right, wrong, inside, outside. This duality has continued we've struggled with this duality. The focus on progress has led to an emphasis on perfection and a relentlessness towards productivity and output to the sacrifice of other needs. The idea that progress is inevitable can cause us to be passive and less engaged in working for change. These ideas of the modern era, which inspired many great things in our world, also brought us racism, capitalism, and consumerism. Right now, in the 21st century, the challenges to these ideas are disrupting our ways of seeing the world. Whose worldview is the correct one? What does correct even mean anymore? Whose version of correct is the one that counts? Who gets to say? But most importantly, what new worldview is being born? Liberal religion has been at a crossroads during this time of transition. Some of the tenets of our faith are being challenged. So as we go forward, we want to question what happens to this theology of reason, progress, and supremacy of the individual. Where do we go from here? That's the subject of the second part of my sermon.
This reading is from the Reverend David Bumbaugh, who was formerly a parish minister in New Jersey and then served as the professor of Unitarian Universalist Ministry at Meadville Lombard Theological School in Chicago, the heart of a faith for the 21st century. Bumbaugh writes, "The heart of a faith for the 21st century, I'm convinced, is suggested by the seventh principle in our statement of principles and purposes, respect for the interdependent web of existence of which we are a part." Hidden in this apparently uncomplicated, uncontroversial, innocuous statement is a radical theological position. The seventh principle calls us to reverence before the world, not some future world, but this miraculous world of our everyday experience. It challenges us to understand the world as relational rather than hierarchical. It speaks of a world in which neither God nor humanity is at the center, in which the center is the void, the ever-fertile and fruitful matrix out of which being emerges. It speaks of a world in which, because all things impinge on all other things, everything matters. It challenges us to accept personal responsibility for the whole and for all the parts of the whole, since in an interactive network, every decision, every relationship has significance for every other decision and every other relationship. It calls us to trust the process, to trust the creative, evolving, renewing, redeeming process which brings us into being, which sustains us in being, and which transforms our being. It offers a vision of a world in which the holy or the sacred is incarnated in every moment, incarnated in every aspect of being, a world in which God is always fully present and in which God is always fully at risk.
So where do we go from here? That was the title of my sermon the Sunday after the election in 2016. I don't always remember all of my sermons, but I sure remember that one. I especially remember how I felt when I gave it. Confused, despairing, angry, humiliated, and lost. How could I have been so wrong about the outcome of the election? It felt like the ground had shifted beneath me and nothing was as I thought it was. Those of you who were here on that day may remember that I shared a dream that I'd had the night of the election. In that dream, my spouse Nancy and I were driving along the highway, lost, hungry, running out of gas. We saw a sign that said, "Women's Center, next exit," and felt a sense of hope and the possibility of safety. We took the exit ramp excited and then noticed disrepair and despair everywhere, lined with homeless people all the way to the end where the boarded up building had a sign that said "Women's Center closed forever." Apparently, I still have feelings about that dream. And it captured my feelings at that time perfectly. The last 17 months have been disorienting and discouraging. While it seemed initially that Trump was a throwback to a more conservative era, he's actually accelerating the shift away from modernity that started decades earlier. He challenges all of our norms and processes and institutions of the modern era, those that I described to you in the first half of the service. He lies without remorse and challenges the idea of truth and reality on a daily, perhaps even hourly basis. He speaks without a filter and sometimes speaks painful truths, truths that make us flinch. The world has shifted radically since the election. Our institutions are under siege. Many of us perceive a lowering of standards, while others are wondering whether we should have standards at all or who sets the standards. We have retreated into tribes of like-minded people to survive our disorientation and despair. This is what I know. We are not going to go back to how it was before. The norms of our modernist culture will not be restored, for worse or for better. The white male, Eurocentric, US-centric version of the way of ordering the world is coming to an end. No matter whether Trump is impeached, no matter who is elected next. Pandora's box has been opened, and it can't be closed. In this time of chaos, new voices are crying out, new ideas are being heard. The way it used to be did not work for a lot of people, as we're now able to hear, as we're now able to see. Did not work for a lot of people of color, people of different classes, people with a different worldview. We live in challenging times, and I truly believe that it's going to get worse before it gets better. There will be continued chaos and collapse. But we must find the possibility inherent in the chaos. We must recognize that the old ways did not work for many people, and that this crisis has the seeds of opportunity for change. And it is our role as religious people and my role as a leader in this community to help us see that possibility. And this is why, for a time such as this, it is critical that we have a robust and grounding theology. Roger shared with you the reading from the UU Reverend David Bumbaugh. I've been saving that reading for years. It was written in 1994. But it calls out to us now in its relevance for our times. I know that, like me, many of you are inspired by the seventh principle, the respect for the interdependent web of which we are all a part. And like Bumbaugh, I believe that it is a theology for our times. And I want to rename this principle, radical interdependence. Radical interdependence, where everyone and everything is connected. Everyone and everything interdependent. I call it radical to wake us up, to counter the cynicism and passivity that is in our world today, often as a response to despair, a different way. I call it radical to have a theology centered on relationship rather than on self. Radical in that it calls us to risk honoring our connections and calls us to make the sacrifice of challenging our self-centered perspective to one of community. What would it mean to see the world as relational rather than hierarchical? We wouldn't always look to outside authorities for solutions or to be the ones to fix the problem. We would seek to connect with others to find a way. We would not only trust our reason, but our intuition. We would honor and learn from natural systems and be in relationship with the creative powers of the universe. It would mean less control and more connection. Bumbaugh says that this theology of radical interdependence challenges us to accept personal responsibility for the whole and for the parts of the whole. So what does this idea of responsibility in this web look like when the needs of the whole differ from our own personal desires? As we move towards diversity and inclusion, are we able to put away our need to be right, our need to have our view of things validated? Can we let go of the need to have the world reflect the way we think it should be? Are we willing to make sacrifices for the greater good? What does radical interconnectedness require of us? Patience, humility, respect for ourselves, respect for others, respect for ideas and people that don't always make sense to us. Curiosity, self-restraint, tolerance, love. Bumbon names some of the challenges of this theology. One of his challenges is risk. Radical interdependence is about relationship, and relationship requires us to risk. The second challenge is to trust the process, the creative, evolving, renewing, redeeming process, which brings us into being, which sustains us in our being, and transforms our being. When I think of this call to radical interdependence, I think of Sacramento's current situation with the Stephon Clark murder, the Stephon Clark death. We fall into the who's right, who's wrong, who's bad, who's good. We immediately want to move to a solution. We immediately want to figure out who did what wrong in a complex web of problems, hundreds and hundreds of years in the making. We want it to be fixed right away. How immature of us. Our mayor is trying to find this balance, trying to walk this fine line between honoring the systems, recognizing that we shouldn't vilify anyone, recognizing that our institutions have led us to this point where the police don't have any other solutions but to kill a black man with a cell phone. We have to be part of this new theology of radical interdependence. We have to be a part to be in relationship and ask these questions, to hold ourselves and everyone in love and care and patience and listening. But in this time I have with you this morning, I'm not going to give you a fully fleshed out version of the theology of radical interdependence. And if I tried to do that this morning, I would just reinforce the idea that making progress is more important than being in relationship. We are just beginning this conversation. And for now, I ask you to sit with these ideas, sit with your feelings, look around. We think we're not a very diverse congregation, but we are diverse in so many ways. Plenty of diversity right here in our lifestyles, our theologies, our goals. A diversity that can make even our coming together challenging. And if we can't do that, how can we honor a broader circle of diversity in our world? On Sunday morning, some people want us to mention God and pray. Others find that uncomfortable. Some want to sing, others don't like to sing. Some want upbeat sermons. Some want to be challenged. Many dimensions, many diversities here. Allow yourself to sit here in the presence of this community, aware of this diversity. The mission of our congregation is to come together and deepen our lives and be a force for healing in the world. Right now, I think we come together is the most important part of our mission statement. Can we begin living out our theology of radical interdependence by allowing all the various diversities here to have a place? Even if some are not a fit for you, even if some ideas or expressions make you uncomfortable, can we trust the process in this community enough to risk deepening our relationships? I propose that this community is a wonderful place to practice what interdependence truly means with those here now and those who have yet to come through our doors. The theology of radical interdependence is a journey. It's a process, not an outcome. And as I make my way in this chaotic world of ours, I found myself grounded and sustained by this idea of interdependence, that I am not alone in finding solutions, in finding a way. Because I don't find it easy to stay grounded in times such as these. And I am a white person with resources and authority. News of the world daily tweets, world strife, disables me. But I strive to lift myself up from the place of despair and stay in relationship, even when it is hard. As you could tell by my emotion when I talked about my dream at the beginning, that nightmare still haunts me. So I want to rewrite that nightmare to move on, nightmare from moving on from feelings of despair, isolation, and hopelessness. Where there was a dead end, I now see a new route of possibility. Rather than feeling isolated, I know that I am not alone to solve problems, and nor do I need to have all the answers. I see all of us there at the end of that street, at the closed women's center on the dead end, pulling away the boards, opening the doors, and rebuilding a place of welcome for all who come, no matter who they are. Where I feel despair, I hold on to possibility. Where there was hopelessness, I see power of relationship. And I see a new dream taking form. May this dream of radical interdependence guide us all in the days to come, whatever gifts and challenges may come our way. So may it be. Blessed be, and amen.